Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sanhedrin Daf Samach Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Our shiur begins by noting the fact that Rabbi Akiva quoted Rabbi Yoshua in the Mishnah regarding the issue of gathering kishuim, which was in effect an issue concerning kishuv. It is implied that Rabbi Akiva learned halachas of lekitas kishuim, of gathering in kishuim, and halachas of kishuv, of black magic, from Rabbi Yeshua. This raises a question, and the question will be the issue at the top of the Gemara on Daf Samach Ches Amud Aleph, where the Gemara begins with a very long question. The long question is, its length is a result of the fact that an entire brisa is quoted. In the brisa, we will show through our markings, through a dashed underline that's used a couple of times, that Rabbi Akiva, in fact, learned halachas of kishuv, of lekitas kishuim, of the gathering of kishuim through black magic. He learned the methodology from Rabbi Eliezer, and seemingly not Rabbi Yoshua. In order to appreciate this, so we're viewing Daf Samach Ches, we notice at the beginning of the source, the second line from the top, a dashed underline Rabbi Eliezer. As you go down, more about halfway down, or a little more than halfway down the source, toward the lower part of the narrow lines of the Gemara, you will see the expression Hilchus Halochas Benetias Kishuim, dashed underline. And it says there, also 2 lines later, Me Akiva ben Yosef. What one sees in this story is that Akiva ben Yosef, Rabbi Akiva that is, asked of Rabbi Eliezer halochas concerning Netias Kishuim. So with our dashed underline, we've highlighted essentially the 3 important points or names and point that are relevant to the long question. Once again, we see from this source that Rabbi Akiva was involved with Rabbi Eliezer in learning halachas of Netias Kishuim, and not like that which was implied by the Mishnah that Rabbi Akiva learned these things from Rabbi Yoshua. So at the very bottom of Samach Zayin Mebeis, the Gemara provides a Dibur HaMaschil from the Mishnah, Omar Rabbi Akiva, v'chulei, which is really Mishum Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Akiva was quoting Rabbi Yoshua in the Mishnah regarding Lekitas Kishuim. And here at the top of Samach Ches Amud Aleph, we start a very long question. We also can take note of our No Say heading that we find in the outside margin, Mifgash, a meeting, Bein Chachomim v'Rabbi Eliezer, Besof Yomov, a meeting between the sages and Rabbi Eliezer toward the end of his life. Umikan loindin, Rabbi Kiva lomad inyone kishuim me Rabbi Eliezer v'lo me Rabbi Yoshua, which is mashma delo kimasnisin, which is, sounds like something other than that which was taught in the Mishnah. Turning to the Gemara, we also note a very long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text between the Gemara and the Rashi. You notice an encircled kuf with a dashed vertical line indicating the length of this question. So we can now read the Gemara inside. V'ha, Rabbi Akiva, may Rabbi Yoshua gomir law? Is it so that Rabbi Akiva learned the issue of Lekitas Kishuim from Rabbi Yoshua? V'ha Tanya, but we have the following source. Kishachola Rabbi Eliezer, when Rabbi Eliezer took ill, and in fact we'll see that he was on his deathbed, Nichnesu Rabbi Akiva v'chavera of Levakro. Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues came to visit him. Hu Yoshev Bekinuf Shalom, he, Rabbi Elazar, was sitting under a canopy, Vehein Yoshmin Betraklin Shelo, and they were sitting in a chamber. Vioisu Hayom Erev Shabbos Hoyo, and the day that they came to visit was Friday, and we'll see from the story it seems to be late Friday afternoon. Vinichnas Hurkinus Benoi, Hurkinus, the son of Rebbe Lezer, entered the area, Lachloitz Tfilov, to remove the tefillin from his father. They were of the opinion that Shabbos is not the zman of wearing tefillin. And it's important to remove the tefillin, for if someone is wearing tefillin on Shabbos, which is, according to this opinion, not the zman for tefillin, and would then go out into Rishus HaRabim, so there would be a problem of hoitzah, of transferring something from one domain to another. The story goes on, Goar bo v'yotza benezifa. Rabbi Eliezer expressed wrath toward his son Hurkinus, and he left in rage. Omar Lohen Lechaverov, Hurkinus said to the rabbis that were assembled, Kemeduma ani shedaita shel abo nitrafa. It appears to me that father has lost his mind. Omar Lohen, Rabbi Lezer, upon hearing that, said, Daito miyushevis, that my mind is fine, v'das imo nitrafa, but his mother's mind is lost. Heich menichin isur skila. How can it be that they are preoccupied with my tefillin, the oiskin, the isur shvus? The isur shvus is a reference to prohibitions on Shabbos that are of a rabbinic nature. So he was saying that her mother, that his mother must have lost her mind, in that she's preoccupied with the issue concerning my wearing of tefillin on Shabbos, which at worst is in the realm of a rabbinic prohibition, and is ignoring manichin, is ignoring the issue of lighting the Shabbos candles, which if done on Shabbos would be a violation of a capital Shabbos offense, being deserving the punishment of stoning. So how is it? What's wrong with his mother? Kevan shiro chachomim shedaito miyusheves olav. When the chachomim noted that his mind was aware of what's going on, nichnesu. We can say he was sober thought. So nichnesu v'yoshvu lefonov meirichuk dalet amos. They came close to where Rabbi Eliezer was seated and they maintained a distance of 4 amos from him, because Rabbi Eliezer was in a form of excommunication because of an incident that took place in Maseches Bava Metzia. And as a result of being in this form of excommunication, referred to as nidui, there is a necessity of maintaining a distance from such a party. Omar lehu, Rabbi Eliezer asked of his visitors, Lama Bosem, why did you come? Omru lei, they answered, Lumod Torah bono, we came to learn Torah from you. Omar Luhu, he said to them, V'ad achshav loma lo basem, and until now, why have you not come? Omru lei, lo hoya lanu p'nai. They responded, we didn't have time. Omar Lohen, he responded to them and said, Tamia ani, I would be amazed, im yomusu misas atzmon, if you people will die a natural death. Omar loy Rabbi Akiva, Sheli Mahu, and Rabbi Akiva inquires as to what is his own fate. Omar lo shelcha koshe mishalehen, that your fate will be worse than theirs. And we know that this was a period in time when the great leaders of the Jewish people were subjected to harsh torture and eventually execution at the hands of the Roman Empire that was in control of the region at that time. They are often referred to as the Asora Haruge Malchus, and Rabbi Akiva's fate was a hideous end, whereby his flesh was scraped off of his body with metal combs while he was alive. Rabbi Eliezer continues here, the Notal Shtei Zroosav, Rabbi Eliezer takes his two arms, the Hinichon al Libo, and places them on his chest. Omar, and Rabbi Eliezer says, Oy lochem Shtei Zroosai, woe unto you, my two arms, Shehen Kishtei Sifrei Torah Shniglolin, they are like two rolled up Sifrei Torah. Rolled up is an illustration of something that, even though it's a Sefer Torah, but you can't read it, being that all of the script is covered up in the roll. Harbe Torah Lamadati, Rabbi Eliezer exclaims, I learned a lot of Torah, Vaharbe Torah Limadati, and I taught a lot of Torah. Harbe Torah Lamadati, I learned a lot of Torah, Velochasati Meraboise Afilu Kikelev Hamalakik Min Hayam, and I did not extract from my mentors even as a kelev, as a dog, laps up from the sea. In other words, my teachers had a vast amount more to teach me, and I took advantage of them in a very, very minimal fashion. An expression of how great his teachers were. Harbe Torah limadati, and I also taught a lot of Torah, v'luchisuni talmidai elo kemakol rishoferes, and my students got from me a very small amount, the amount that the analogy that he uses here is that of an applicator put into a tube, that when one withdraws the applicator, a very fine dusting is on the tip of the applicator as one withdraws it from a tube of, let's say, some type of cosmetic. Another expression of that, though he claims he taught a lot of Torah, he had a lot more to give over, and that the students extracted from him a very small amount, as this analogy indicates. Veloid, and furthermore, and we're going to see this expression repeated twice, so we've taken the liberties of indicating that with our series marker, the double underline. And not only that, Elo Shani Shoina Sholosh Meos Halochis Bibaharis Azo, I have 300 different laws regarding the Baharis Azo is a type of tsaras, it's a color level in Marois Negoyim, the Lohoya Odom Sheshwalani Bohem Dover Meolam, and no one ever asked of me in that topic anything. In other words, I have a storehouse of knowledge in this area, and no one ever inquired of me anything on this topic. V'lo oid, and not only that, Elo Shani Shoina Sholosh Meos Halochos Ve'amri Lo, another version, Sholoshes Alofim Halochos. One version says I have 300 laws, and another version 3,000 laws in Halochos Benetias Kishuin regarding the area of black magic, as is demonstrated in the realm of planting the Kishuin vegetable. In other words, we'll see this illustrated in the Brisa in a short while, that through the powers of Kishuf, one is able to fill a field with these Kishuin vegetables. V'lohoya odam sho'alani bohen dover me'olam, and no one ever asked of me concerning these matters, chutz mi'Akiva ben Yosef. And this really is the main reason we're bringing in this entire source, to show that within the realm of Hilchos Kishuim, Rabbi Akiva did inquire of Rabbi Eliezer concerning that matter, and that leads us to think that Rabbi Akiva learned Hilchos Kishuim not from Rabbi Yeshua, as was suggested in the Mishnah, but rather from Rabbi Eliezer, as we see over here. And Rabbi Eliezer goes on telling us, Pam achas ani v'hu mahalchin hoyinu baderech, once upon a time, I and he, Rabbi Akiva, were walking on the road, Omar li, and Rabbi Akiva turned to me and said, Rabbi, lamdeni benetias kishuim, teach me concerning this realm of kishuf with regard to the planting of kishuim. Omarti dover, I then said something. Omarti dover echor, I said something, maybe a type of spell. And nismalo kol hasode kishuim, and the field got filled up with the kishuim vegetables. Omar li, and then Rabbi Kiva said to me, Rebbe Limadetani Nityosan, you've taught me the planting of them. Lamdeni Akirosa, now teach me how to harvest them or uproot them. Omarti Dovor Echod, I then said something. Niskavsu Kulon Lamokom Echod, and all of the Kishuim gathered together into one spot. At this point, we essentially see the main question has just been asked. However, the story goes on. Remember, we're talking about a meeting with Rebbe Eliezer and the other leading rabbinic figures. They turn to him and ask, Omru lo, they mention now a number of vessels. What we can say without getting into the details of these vessels, we're going to now embark into a realm concerning Tumas Kalim, the ability of different vessels to absorb ritual impurity. The following list of vessels that are going to be mentioned here are what they have in common is they are items that are covered in leather, and they are meant to be covered in leather permanently. For example, a ball is essentially a piece of leather into which is stuffed other material, and the leather is sewn shut in a spherical fashion, creating a ball. In that sense, though the leather is a holder of something else, what we call a base kibble, and generally speaking, if a kli or has a base kibble, it would be makabel tumah, it is susceptible to receiving tumah. What is the story with this kind of situation where the skin that contains something is designed to contain it permanently and not to be emptied out? Is that Mekabel Tuma or not? So they turn to Rebbe Eliezer and now list off a number of these kind of items, clay ore that are designed to be full permanently, Hakadur Vahimus Vakamea Utsror Hamargalios Umishkoilus Kitana. Mahu, are you continuing to disagree with us on this matter? Let us elaborate. The Shitas Chachamim concerning these kind of vessels is that a kli or ha'osui lemalois oilomis to be permanently filled is not mekabel tuma. Rabbi Eliezer was of the opinion that it is mekabel tuma. It does absorb ritual impurity. So they asked him, "Are you still at odds with us?" Omar Lahen, he answered them, "Yes, I am still in disagreement. Hain Temein, they are Mekabel Tuma." And another point that they actually had a disagreement about is if these vessels tore open, and one wanted to immerse them in a mikveh, would the contents constitute a chatzitza, an interposition, or not? So Rabbi Eliezer says, V'taharoson b'ma shehen. The tahara, the reaching of their purification is as they are. In other words, you can immerse them with their contents in them, and the contents does not constitute a chatzitza. The Chachomim, on the other hand, disagree. Another issue, Minol Sha'al Gabi Ha'imus Mahu, a shoe that is being formed, it's being sewn together, a shoe is being made, and it's in its last stages. In all it really needs at this point, the shoe has been completed, it needs to be removed from the last, from the form around which the shoe is molded. Mahu, the question that's being raised is the shoe, prior to its being removed from the last, is it mekabel tuma? Omar Lahen, Rabbi Eliezer says, hu tahor. The shoe, since it hasn't been removed yet, it still is not considered completed, and a vessel prior to its completion is viewed as not being susceptible to absorbing ritual impurity. So Rabbi Eliezer said the shoe, while it's still on the last, it is pure, meaning it's not mekabel tuma. And at that point, he passed away. V'yotza nishmosoi betara. And his soul departed from him in purity. Impurity is a type of play on words over here, meaning the last thing he said was tahor, and his departure is viewed as the departure of a righteous sage. Omad Rabbi Yoshua Araglov, Rabbi Yoshua arose to his feet, the Omar, and declared, Hutar Haneder. The announcement here is that the nidui, the excommunication that he was subjected to, is now rescinded. L'motzoi Shabbos, as we can see from the story, he passed away on Shabbos. When Motzoi Shabbos came and it was now time to bury Rabbi Eliezer, Pogabo Rabbi Akiva min Kesri Lelud. Rabbi Akiva met up with him between the area of Kesri and Lud. Rashi explains they were carrying the coffin from Kesri to Lud for burial, and Rabbi Akiva met up with them at that point. And Hoyamake Bibsoro, Rabbi Akiva was beating his own flesh, Ad Shedomoi Sheiseis Loretz, until he was bleeding. Posach Olov Beshura V'Omar. The Shura is a reference to the row of people, of mourners, of those accompanying the deceased, and they lined up and issued eulogies. And Rabbi Akiva said in his eulogizing remarks, he said, V'Omar Ovi, and he's quoting a posuk which was said by the prophet Elisha at the moment that the prophet Elio departed in a fiery chariot. And Elisha declared, Ovi, Ovi, Rechev Yisrael Uporoshov, O Father, the leader of Israel. Harbe Mo'os Yeshli. This is now Rabbi Akiva himself speaking. Having finished the quote of the posuk, Rabbi Akiva continues in his own words. He says, Harbe Mo'os Yeshli. I have lots of coins. V'eini shulchani laharzosan. I don't have a money changer to exchange them with. A reference, of course, to the many questions that Rabbi Akiva still has concerning Torah learning, with Torah related questions, and he doesn't have the authority, he doesn't have Rabbi Eliezer around anymore with whom to consult. And this is what Rabbi Akiva was bemoaning. Alma, we see from all of this, may Rabbi Eliezer Gomra, that Rabbi Akiva learned Hilchus Kishuin from Rabbi Eliezer, and not, as the Mishnah indicated, having learned that Rabbi Akiva learned from Rabbi Yoshua. The Gemara answers, both sources have their own accuracy, as follows. Gomra may Rabbi Eliezer, velo Sovra. Rabbi Akiva initially learned from Rabbi Eliezer, but he didn't reach the svora, the understanding of it. Hodar gomra mi Rabbi Yeshua. Then he went to learn from Rabbi Yeshua. The asbara nihale, and Rabbi Yeshua was successful in communicating the understanding of it to Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara asks, regarding the story, we saw that Rabbi Eliezer caused a field to be planted with kishuim through black magic. But how can one practice black magic? Is it not punishable by death? How could he do that? How could he have the field planted with the kishuf? Have we not learned in the Mishnah that says ha'oise ma'ase chayav, that one who does an action through the black magic is guilty of death penalty? So the Gemara answers, Lehislame Chini. If one's kavona is in order to teach over the particulars of black magic in order to understand it, that is a different story. The Omamar, the Gemara now quotes a posuk, Lo Silmad Lasos. One is not allowed to learn black magic in order to practice it. And the Gemara infers, Lasos Yato Lomed. to practice it, you're not allowed to study. In other words, you're not allowed to study it in order to practice it. Aval ata lomed, however, you can study black magic, lahavin ulahoros, to understand what's going on and to teach and to paskin, to issue legal rulings concerning that whole affair. In other words, if one wants to serve as a judge concerning matters of black magic, the judge is going to sit on a case where a mechashef is brought in to be prosecuted. It's of utmost importance that the judge himself has a thorough understanding of the topic of black magic. And that's what Rabbi Eliezer was communicating to Rabbi Akiva at the point that he, Rabbi Eliezer, was planted the field. And as the Gemara just mentioned, that is within bounds, because that is not in violation of the Pasuk which says, Lo silmad la'asos, not to study and learn these things in order to simply practice it, but one is allowed to do it if it's for paskening on, for issuing legal rulings. With that, we complete the seventh perek. The new Mishnah at the top of Samaches Amud Beis, the beginning of the eighth perek of Sanhedrin, Ben Sorer Umoreh. He was also in the list of those that were mentioned in the seventh perek that are subject to the penalty of stoning. The Ben Sorer Umoreh, we will see in much greater detail as we go on in the perek, but he is a young adult. We'll see later in the Gemara. Essentially, he's between 13 years and 13 and 3 months of age, a very limited time span in which one can become categorized as a Ben Sorer Umoreh. He is guilty of, in general terms, without getting into details, he is guilty of stealing and buying meat and wine and consuming it. And the Torah expresses the fear that a young adult who is involved with that kind of lifestyle, eventually, in order to get money to continue his lifestyle, he will rob people and eventually come to kill them in his pursuit of money to maintain his habit. The Torah therefore says, better for us to execute him now before he is over, before he comes to violate the prohibition of killing others. The Mishnah continues, Me emosai nase ben soru mora. From what age can one be categorized as a ben soru mora? Answer, Mishiyovi Shtei Saros, from the point that he produces two hairs of adulthood, V'ad Shiyakiv Zokon, until the beard is surrounded with a row of hairs. And the Mishnah mentioned the Zokon, the beard. The Mishnah clarifies, Hatachtoin V'lo Ha'olyoin, Elo Shedibru Chachomen B'losha Nikia. The beard referred to here is in effect a euphemism. It's a reference to the adult hairs appearing on the lower part of the body, and the term used in the Mishnah of Zokon was simply because of what's called Loshon Nikiyah, clean language. Shenemar, the Pasuk explains, the Pasuk that's being cited here is not a continuation of the issue of Loshon Nikiyah, but rather it's the source in the Torah that the Ben Sorer Umoreh is one only from the point he enters into the first stages of adulthood, and not what the simple translation of the pasuk might have indicated, a child. So the Gemara goes, the Mishnah goes on to say, Shneamar ki yeh leish ben, and we are now going to make inferences. Ben v'lo bas, this halacha concerning Ben Sorer Umoreh is a male child and not a girl who behaves in this way. The halachas and of Ben Sorer Umoreh do not apply to a daughter. Ben v'loi ish. Ben is a reference to the son who is a very, very young adult. He just entered adulthood by the appearance of two adult hairs. Velo ish, but not someone who we would call ish. The term ish is relevant to someone whose lower adult hairs encompassed the circumference of the bris, of the male organ. So that the use of the word ben in the pasuk, which said, kiye li'ish ben, the word ben is used to exclude a bas, a daughter, and it's also used to exclude ben and not a man. And a man, as we just said, is the point. If a person reaches this point in his physical development, where his lower hairs are surrounding the bris, then he... And at that point he starts this type of lifestyle where he steals in order to buy meat and wine, he would not become a ben sora mor. He would not be condemned or prosecuted as this with a death penalty. Katan potur, a minor who does these things is exempt. Shelo ba lechlal mitzvos. Because he hasn't reached the age at which point at which he is obligated to keep the mitzvahs. Therefore, only at the point that he produces the Shnei Sairos can we then rule against him and condemn him. The Gemara opens up with a question that seems to be of a rather curious nature. Before we read the Gemara itself, let's take advantage of our topic heading. Minolon de Koton lo mischayev liois ben sorer amora. From where do we know that a minor, that a boy under 13, cannot become categorized as a ben sorer amora? The Gemara asks this question, Koton minolon de potter. We encounter immediately a bracketed section. These brackets are designed for skipping in order to maintain the simple logical flow of the reading, because once you skip the brackets, we immediately encounter the answer. The question was asked, from where do we know that a katan, that a minor, is exempt? And then we would continue reading Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav right after the brackets. And by the way, the length of the brackets, if one has a trouble finding where they end, one should take advantage of our length marker for the brackets, which is a dash dotted line that appears to the side of the Gemara text, in this case to the right hand side of the Gemara text. That will indicate the line on which the brackets closes. So the question having been asked, from where do we know that a katan, that a minor is exempt, we skip the brackets. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav, the Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, V'chi yeh li'ish ben. And he understands that to mean, ben hasamuch l'gvurasoi shel ish. The way he reads the Pasuk is, V'chi yeh, and when, the person Leish enters the realm of Ish, the Ben. Or as we see in the Rashi, he uses an expression, L'chshiyagia, L'chlal Ish, HaBen HaZeh. When this child enters the realm of being an Ish, enters the realm of adulthood, thereby excluding the minor. We'll go over this Gemara again, but before we do that, we want to make a few more notes. The use of a double underline, you can see here with Rav Yehuda Omar Rav, this is explained, the presence of the double underline, which is another one of our series indicators, is explained in the outside margin under the Nosei Mivneh heading. The double underline features Shnei Halochas Shenilmedu Mehaposuk Ki Ye Li'ish Ben, two halochas that are learned from this one posuk. Then we have a note, He'ara, Bahemshech, Od Nosei Chofef. As the Gemara will continue, there will be another overlapping topic. We will then see, as the Gemara goes on, the use of a diamond. When we get to that, we will hopefully explain its purpose here. The section within the brackets is explained by our bracket note, which you can see where the asterisk appears in the margin on the at the point at which the brackets began, right after the opening question. Let us read the note we've included. Hasograyim, you see on the inside margin, Hasograyim, the brackets are mi'udim, are designed lishmo al retzef ha-gemara, to maintain the logical flow of the Gemara. Besoch Hasograyim, ha-gemara matzdika, within the brackets, the Gemara will justify lomo yesh tzorech limtzo mokor liftor es ha-koton. The Gemara will justify the need to find a source to exempt a minor. Klomar, lomo yesh havamina she nechayev oso. In effect, what we're going to be asking is, what was the initial thought to think that a minor might be guilty, thereby generating the need to find a source saying that he is innocent, or that he is excluded from this particular legal section. More simply stated, it seems to be a dover poshet. It's well known that a minor is exempt. Why is there a need to seek out a special source? So within the bracketed section, the Gemara will grapple with this issue. Let's continue with the brackets. The Gemara, after having asked the Kotam min Nolan the Potter, the Gemara reacts with wonderment, min Nolan? From where are you asking? Well, the Mishnah says, Kide Kotani Taimo, the Mishnah already explained, Shaloi Bo Lichlal Mitzvos. This is a direct quote from the Mishnah. The end of the Mishnah said that a minor is exempt because he hasn't entered the realm of mitzvah obligation. Vesu, and furthermore, Hecho ashkechon de onash hakosuv. Where else do we ever see that a minor is punished by Torah law? De hocho liboy kol demifterei. That in this case I need to find a pasuk to exempt him. In other words, we never find the Torah condemning a minor, and that being the case, there's no need to find a special pasuk over here to serve as a source for exempting him. The Gemara answers, Anan hochi kvarminon. It is thusly that we are asking. There is reason to raise all kinds of suspicions that maybe a kotan, maybe a minor is guilty, of can become guilty of this. As follows, Otu ben soru more al cheto nerag. Is a ben soru more put to death because of the very sin that he commits? His basic sin that he is committing right now is a sin of theft. Now, we know in general, theft is not something that carries with it a death penalty. And yet, we do put to death this ben soru more who, on the surface of things, all he's done is theft. So we know that the Ben Sora Mora is a rather unusual parsha, rather unusual section of law. Let's read this again. Otu Ben Sora Mora al cheto nerag. Is he killed because of the sin he committed? No, al shem sofo nerag. The reason we execute this boy after he commits the theft, and having been warned not to do it, of course, his execution is really in anticipation of what his lifestyle will eventually lead to, namely a lifestyle of murder. Well, Kevon the Al Shem Sofo Nerag, taking this into consideration, that he is killed really in anticipation of what he is going to become, I might have thought then, Afilu Kotonami, that we should execute even a Koton in anticipation of what he might turn into. The Oid, and furthermore, the Pasuk uses the word Ben, Velo ish, and we were medayik, we inferred from the use of the word ben, we said ben and not an ish, katan mashma. That itself implies a minor. So all this having been said, namely al shem sofo nerag, and the use of the word ben, which has the ring, the tone of a minor to it, maybe a minor is included in the realm of ben so more, and hence there is a legitimate basis for asking the question, from where do I know to exclude a minor? I really did have grounds to include him. Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Di Omar Kro, the pasuk says v'chi yeh le'ish ben, that is the pasuk, which equals ben hasamuch l'gevurasoi shel ish. To appreciate this, let's just glance in the Rashi, where you find an asterisk in the lower part of the narrow lines of Rashi, v'chiyeh li'ish ben sora moreh, which is a quote from the pasuk, v'chishiyagia l'chlal ish haben hazeh, when this son comes into the realm of ish, korei lo hakosuv ben sora moreh, that's when he enters the category of being classified as a ben sora moreh if he practices these prohibited activities. We notice a brackets appears again. The reason for these brackets is that after the brackets, Rav Chisda will come in, and we saw before the double underline was an indicator that these represent two halachas that are both learned from the same pasuk. So the asterisk explanation note concerning the brackets, which you find on the inside margin, says as follows: Tam hasograyim, hino l'chaber bein shnei halachas. The purpose of these brackets is in order to connect up, to create a sense of continuity between, or relationship between, that which appeared just before it, namely that which Rav Yehuda Amar Rav said, and that which Rav Chisda says. These are to connect up these two laws, Shel Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, Shel Rav Chisda, Shenil Medu, their two halachas are derived mehaposik from the verse that says Ki Yeh Li'ish Ben. That having been said, so visually we are already now aware that there is a connection, so to speak, between the first double underline, the Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, and that which Rav Chisda says later. Each one is going to says something that ties into the pasuk, or that is learned from the pasuk of Ki Yeh Li'ish Ben. The question will be, well, what will each one do with the other one's point? Let's now look into the bracketed section itself. The Mishnah had said, V'ad Shiyakif Zokon Hatachtoin, that from the point in his life that the two adult hairs appear on the lower part of his body, and until they surround the Zokon Hatachton, it is during that time period that a child, if he's engaged in theft, in order to buy meat and drink wine, that he can become a ben sora moreh. Tani Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya explains the Mishnah in a clearer fashion. He says, Ad Shiyakif Atorah, until the Atorah is surrounded by hair. And what is meant by that? So we have a connector indicating to really keep reading. Ki Asa Rav Dimi Omar, Rav Dimi explained this brisa that said, Hakofas gid velo hakofas beitzim. The hairs that we speak about growing in the pubic area are hairs from are hairs up to the point. In other words, his classification as a ben sora moreh will be up till the point that the hairs surround the organ itself, and not the beitzim, the sac containing the beitzim of the male, the scrotum area. In other words, if that already is an older person, where there's enough hair to cover that entire area below the organ itself, we're not saying that the time for becoming a ben sora moreh extends that long. Omar Rav Chisda, Koton Sheholid, we encounter now a new geometric form, this bow tie, and this also is indicated on the side. We have a note called Nosei Mivne. The bow tie is featured. Machloikes e Koton Molid. We will encounter a controversy between Rav Chisda and Rabbah. Is it possible for a minor to father a child? So Rav Chisda says, Katan Shehoilid, a minor that fathered a child, Ein Benoi Nase Ben Soro More. His son, in other words, the son of a minor, when he becomes an adult, if he was born to a father that himself was a minor, this son cannot become a ben soro mora. Shneamar, the pasuk says, kiye leish ben. And the emphasis here is as follows, leish ben, when an adult has a son, velo leben ben, and not when a minor has a son. So we see the use of the pasuk, the same pasuk that we saw above, is used by Rav Chisda for a different purpose. The Gemara asks, but hi mi boy alei lechratino marav, do I not need this pasuk of kiyeh leish ben for Rav Yehuda Amarav's teaching, which dealt with the age at which the child can become a ben sor more? In other words, don't I need this very pasuk as a focus on the child himself, and not like Rav Chisda says, a pasuk which describes the father of the potential ben soro more? So Rav Chisda answers, im kain, if the pasuk was just focusing on the boy himself, lema kra, the pasuk would have said, kiyeh ben leish, when the ben becomes an adult. In other words, the first stage of adulthood, the appearance of two hairs. But it doesn't say that. My kiyeh liish ben, what is really meant by the pasuk as it is in fact written? Shma mino l'Rav Chisda, to bring out Rav Chisda's point. Namely, that when an ish has a ben, where the focus here is on the father, when an ish has a ben, and not when a ben has a ben. Well, that sounds like a very powerful explanation. V'ema kulei l'hochi hudasa. Maybe the pasuk is designed exclusively to teach Rav Chisda's din. In other words, a description of the father of the son who is a potential to become a ben soro more. And the pasuk is not at all teaching me what Rav Yehuda Amar Rav says, that it is a description of the ben himself. So the Gemara says, that's not so either. Namely, if the pasuk was entirely to teach me Rav Chisda's approach, im kain neimakra, the pasuk would have said ben ish, the son of an ish, which would clearly indicate the emphasis on the father, the son of an ish, the son of an adult. But it doesn't say that either. My leish ben, what is meant by this? So shma mino tarti, we are allowed to derive both halachas, both Rav Yehuda Amarav, which was describing the ben himself, and Rav Chisda, which was describing the father, from the same posuk. Shma mino tarti is explained by Rashi, so we will look below there into the Rashi. Shma mino tarti says, mishum dehashto mashma hochi mashma hochi. At this point, the posuk implies both halachas. Kiye ben leish, kishiyagia legvurasoi shalish, when the son himself reaches the category, literally the strength of an adult, which would mean when the two hairs appear. Umishtamea nami avua. The pasuk also implies a focus on the father. Kiye leish gadol ben, when an adult has a son. Veloshia lekoton ben, as opposed to a situation where a minor would father a child. As we go on in the Gemara, we point out upligo de Rabba, the approach that Rav Chisda reflected is at odds with that of Rabba. Ti Omar Rabba, koton enoi moilid. A minor is not able to father a child. Shinemar, the Gemara now quotes a pasuk, im ein leish goel. The topic of this pasuk is a situation where a person stole from a convert, and he swore that he didn't, and then admitted that he did steal, and the convert passed away after he swore. And now he eventually admits that he swore falsely, the Torah requires that he restore the money, but the ger is not around anymore, and he may not have any descendants. In the event that he doesn't have any descendants, the money is given to the Kohanim. Rabbah told us that a kotan is not molid, and he cited this pasuk, which says, "Im ein leish goel," if the person that was stolen from, and hence really owed to him the money, but he died, and he has no goel, he has no relatives. So then the Torah says that the money is paid to the Kohanim. The Gemara asks, "V'chi yesh l'cha adam b'Yisrael she'ein lo goel?" Is it possible to have a member of the Jewish people that doesn't have a relative? In effect, we generally speaking trace ourselves back to Yaakov Avinu, father after son, all the way backwards. So someone's going to have a long lost cousin, even if it's a 15th cousin. So how can the Pasuk describe a situation of a person that was stolen from and died, leaving no relatives whatsoever? Elo begezel hagir hakosu medaber. There is a type of person that may not have any relatives whatsoever. That's a person who became a convert, who converted to Judaism. And we know that when a person converts to Judaism, he thereby detaches himself from all of his past with regard to legal relatives. As far as legal relatives are concerned, we're not saying that he can't pick up the phone and speak to his Gentile parents, but we are saying that a person, when he converts, he legally disconnects from all those that he was once related to. And as a result of that, he can have a situation of a person that converted and was stolen from, and eventually the victim died, and the money has to be restored, and we say that it would be paid to the Kohanim. The Gemara at the top of Samach Tes, Omer Aleph, continues, V'omar Rachmona Ish. In that pasuk we just read, it said, Im ein le'ish goel. It could have just as well said, V'im ein loy goel. Why is the word Ish added in? So the Gemara explains, the word Ish is added in, Ish atotzorech lachzer olav im yesh loy goyalim im lav. If the person that died, this ger, this convert that died, died as an adult, there is a need to seek out, to search, to research, does he have any relatives? As the pasuk implies that after researching it, that we found that he has no relatives, then the money is paid to the Kohanim as opposed to paying it to one of the surviving relatives. But as we just said, when is it necessary to conduct such a research project? That's if the deceased was an ish. However, katan I atot sorech lachzer olav. If the deceased was a katan, in other words, you had a minor that was converted, and he was stolen from, and the victim of the theft died, there is no need to seek out any descendants from him, because biyodua she'ein loy goyalin. It is obvious that he has no descendants. He has no children. This is, of course, contrasted with the ish that we mentioned at the top line, that if the convert that died was an adult, then before the money would be transferred to the Kohanim, it would be necessary to research, did he leave any children? Children that were born to him after he converted. However, if the convert in question is a minor, and he was stolen from, and eventually this minor died, there is no need to conduct any research because it is obvious that he bore no children. This hence serves as the basis for this diuk, this inference from the word ish, serves as a basis for Rabbah's opinion that katan eino moidlid. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.